This is the Business Report with Gary Strubel on Nova 103.5.
It's Thursday, it's 6 o'clock, and from now on, what that means, it's time for the Business Report. My name's Gary Strubel, and welcome to it. It's the first ever edition of the Business Report, a brand new business show here on Nova 103.5, where we will try and bring you some of the biggest voices, personalities, and stories in Africa, all related to business, commerce, politics, and economics. Coming up in today's first show, I must just perhaps first confess before I get to that, it's been 21 years since I last hosted a radio show, so be kind and gentle to me today as we try and get through this enormous amount of content and stories we have for you. We'll be talking to Dr. Omu Kukuyu-Matundu about the midweek or the mid-year budget that was tabled this week in a feature called The Spotlight. We'll be talking to Maria Emmanuel and hearing her thoughts on agriculture and entrepreneurship. We will also be chatting to Alec Hogg, the founder of BizNews and the BizNews Wrap, our content partners, as he talks about the biggest stories on the platform for the week. And then Eric Van Sail, the managing director designate of IJG, will be in for the NSX Market Watch as we take a look at the local bourse and all the stories around that. And then we'll also catch up with Minister Pohamba Shafeta later in the show, who of course is representing Namibia at COP26. A lot of big decisions to be made by the world, and as always, Namibia will be at the table. We'll be chatting to the minister later in the show. So that's what you have to look forward to for the next hour or so. All of these segments will be available on podcast. You can go along to nova.com.na and check out all the elements. Also on iono.com, you can go and listen to all of the pieces if you missed something or you wanted to check it out. My name's Gary Strubel. This is the Business Report. And before we get into it, it's time for the BizNews Flash Briefing.
Rebuilding the economy starts now. RMB Namibia Corporate and Investment Banking, proud partner of BizNews.
Economist Mike Schüssler says that South Africa's load shedding problems have cost the country well over a million jobs. A report by PwC recently posited that load shedding in 2021 will cost the country 350,000 jobs. However, Schüssler said that aside from large industries like the service industry and the telecom sector, thousands of smaller businesses and jobs were lost due to the failing grid. Along with the direct impact of power restrictions, the widely known electricity problems also deter foreign investment, the economist said, which further stifles growth. Eskom says that it will need between 460 billion rand and 537 billion rand over the next 15 years to transition away from generating electricity from coal. This is more than triple the amount Eskom previously said it would need to shut down most of its coal-fired power stations by 2050. As a major contributor to South Africa's carbon footprint, Eskom will play a pivotal role in enabling a just energy transition from coal to low and no carbon sources of electricity generation, said Eskom Group CEO André de Ruyter. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa announced yesterday that South Africa would receive 130 billion rand in funding over 3 to 5 years from several rich nations to support the country's move from coal to clean energy. With over two-thirds of the ballots counted, the ANC's share of the national vote in the 2021 local elections is still on track to fall by up to 10 percentage points from 56% in 2016 to 46% in 2021. Many of its traditional supporters appear to have elected not to vote, with the total votes cast down by as much as one-third on the elections 5 years ago. The trends suggest that this ANC no-show is costing the party dearly. It will need to strike coalitions to retain control of any of SA's major metros, including the previous fortress of eThekwini, where its share is currently a massive 16 percentage points down on 2016 at slightly over 40%. For regular updates on the local election results, visit biznews.com.
A sudden storm shouldn't disrupt your long-term outlook. Access RMB's flexible short-term liquidity. Rebuilding our economy starts now. RMB Namibia, a division of First National Bank of Namibia Limited.
Gary Strubel on the Business Report.
Our first segment this evening is The Lead Story, and The Lead Story is proudly brought to you by Alexander Forbes. Alexander Forbes, let us help you secure your financial well-being now and into the future. Our lead story this evening is the mini-budget that was tabled by Parliament. The Minister of Finance, Ipumbo Shimi, tabled the midterm budget review under a green energy theme. The review is focused on reallocating the realised resource envelope across critical expenditure items that Shimi said could not be postponed to future financial years. The reallocated amount constitutes just over 41 million Namibia dollars and 279.8 Namibia dollars realized from suspension on the operational budget and the development budget, respectively. We contacted Dr. Umu Kukuya Matundu, an economics lecturer at the University of Namibia, for his view on the midterm budget review. Dr. Umu, welcome to the program. Our first question this evening, with an 8.5% contraction in the economy, which is, of course, higher than was initially anticipated in the March budget, how would this affect the planned economic initiatives on the short and the long term?
That contraction shows that COVID hit us very hard and compounded the whole slow economic growth. There is no plan. It's basically to see how the global economy and commodity prices are doing and just the old stuff that made us at least to keep our head above the water. It shows in real, not only statistics, but if you eyeball the situation, unemployment rate is just skyrocketing. So that contraction is very deep, but there's no plan.
The forecasted growth for the sub-Saharan Africa region has been revised at 3.7% for 2021 and then to increase marginally to 3.8% in 2022, whereas South Africa for 2021 has been forecast at 5% and that tapers down to a mere 2.2% in 2022. Why is there a forecasted increase for sub-Saharan Africa but a big decrease for the South African economy? And how does this impact Namibia, given that we are pegged to the rand?
South African growth, even though it would be modest, they are not starting at a very low base like all the African economies. So I'm not very worried as long as it is positive growth. Well, it is below where you wanted it to be to create jobs and the like. But you are very right. We are fortunate, even though we are pegged to the rand and that slow growth, we could have maybe have pegged ourselves to a Kwanzaa where growth is high. But where that growth is high, there are no goods to buy. The goods to buy is from South Africa.
With a deficit of 3.1 billion Namibia dollars being declared on the current account during quarter two of 2021, compared to the surplus of 5.4 billion declared in the same quarter last year, does this mean we are currently operating in an economy with an 8 billion Namibia dollar contraction year on year in terms of the current account? And if that's the case, what does that mean for the Namibian economy?
Last year, that surplus that you're talking about, it's because we were buying nothing. Because the economy was on lockdown. And now the thing that you have seen is that our economy, I think last quarter, recovered by around 1%. Then we started to import. So meaning that when we are coming back to life, the current account deficit widens. We are now sending more money outside, meaning that this economy is structurally just where it was, relying more on commodities and no manufacturing. We are importing more than what we export, and that is not a healthy situation. So something should be done about that.
With the current 62% debt to GDP ratio, what impact does it have in the lower income market where debt funding prevails?
As your debt metrics are going up, you become less and less attractive to investors and also to whoever wants to hold your debt, that is to buy government bonds and the like. So even your local lenders, they are going to go for what is called speculative bids, meaning that they know that you are desperate for money. And when you are desperate for money, you go to cash loans and they charge you 30%. It will be a similar situation. So such a high debt to GDP ratio is not very healthy. We have exceeded both the Namibian and the SADC thresholds. We understand why we reached there. It was because of trying to tame COVID plus our own slow growth.
Our last question, Dr. Omo, is the launching of the second Harambee Prosperity Plan enough to protect and grow the Namibian economy?
Not at all. The question that came to my mind when I was listening to the minister and he came up with the projects in the Harambee is, what about Harambee 1? What did we get out of it? What he was basically doing, the minister, is just to smear some honey on the MP's mouths, pulling wool over their eyes by mentioning all these things. If you look at that list, you won't see where he's saying that it's this project, we are now initiating it, we have started with it, it is going to employ so many people, it is going to generate this much money for the country, nothing at all. At all. You are just talking about SEMAS, MS5, diversifying the economy as it is. Paper is not implementation. Anyone can write something on paper, but it should be implemented. You can't just say, I'm having chicken, we lay egg, but there's no chicken in your yard. Who will believe you? And you have said that to telling your neighbors that for the longest while, so they won't believe you. The minister's speech was so empty that you cannot even derive from what he was saying what Harambee 2 is going to bring to us. So to me, that Harambee 2 story didn't add up.
That was Dr. Amu Kakuya Matundu, an economics lecturer at the University of Namibia, for his view on the midterm budget review tabled in Parliament this week. And the lead story was proudly brought to you by Alexander Forbes. Alexander Forbes, let us help you secure your financial well-being now and in the future.
Gary Strubel on The Business Report.
Right, time now on The Business Report for a brand new feature, as is every feature tonight, of course. And it's time for The Spotlight. And The Spotlight is an idea to talk to luminaries in Namibia, talk a little bit about their career paths and the things that drive them and their motivations, and also to understand what they're busy with at the moment. There's an enormous amount of topicality happening in all sorts of different sectors, and we'd like to speak to the people who are in charge of those things. And tonight in The Spotlight, just remember, tonight's Spotlight is brought to you by the Safland Property Group. Safland Property Group, a leading provider of property services since 1992. Tonight on The Spotlight, we speak to Maria Emmanuel, who is a technical advisor to the Agricultural Trade Forum. Good evening, Maria, and thank you for agreeing to be our Spotlight guest on The Business Report tonight.
Thank you, and it's a pleasure to be invited. Thank you so much.
And whereabouts in the world are you finding yourself at the moment?
I am in the capital city of Windhoek, of Namibia, the beautiful Windhoek.
All right, brilliant.
I'm in the capital city, yes, in Windhoek.
Great. So let's start out a little bit about talking a little bit about Maria. With your extensive experience from the Meat Board to the presidency and now the Agri-Trade Forum, tell us briefly of the journey that got you here.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. I always see my journey as one of those maybe blessed because of the people that took me in immediately from university. So I did my first grad degree at the University of Namibia in agriculture economics. And in our third year, we do internship. And I had a pleasure to do my internship at the Meat Board. And immediately when I finished my final exams, I was called back to actually start at the Meat Board. And that's how my career in agriculture specifically, kicked off. So I had really a good privilege under my first boss, Mr. Willy Schutz, who really put me through the whole sector, getting to know the whole sector, because, the Meat Board is the control board of the agri sector. So you interface with the different subsectors within the meat industry. And that really got me to that level. In between there, I stayed around 3 years at the Meat Board, and I moved on to Namibia Trade Forum, which actually then expanded my knowledge in international trade, law and policy. Then I actually also at the same time went ahead and did my master's in international trade law and policy with the University of Cape Town, the Graduate School, University of Cape Town. I was doing that at the same time working and studying, and I managed to get my master's around 2016 while also representing Namibia in trade agreements, at that different level for market access for Namibian products specifically. And then I had another privilege again to work for the presidency, for the office of the president, where, again, I think it was one of those once-in-a-lifetime opportunities to work at that high level, having a bird's view in terms of governance, policy issues, just how the country functions. Of course, dealing also specifically with the private sector, with what I'm passionate about, international trade, when I can. But I think the opportunity there was just to understand the overall functionality of the country. I've just joined recently, 6 months ago, the Agriculture Trade Forum, which actually specify just in the agriculture sector. So it's almost the same with the Namibia Trade Forum. Just the Namibia Trade Forum looks at the wider sector, including every other sector. And the agriculture sector is specifically for the agriculture in terms of market access, trade policy, particularly trade negotiation at the international level, representing the interest of the private sector, inputting into government policy. So this is a very key institution, a unique institution, where we actually sit with government and try to assist policymaking in international trade with the private sector's input. And that's basically my main job now. It involves also, you know, trade analysis, you know, just the training and every other activity that we are trying to do to promote and push the productivity of the agriculture sector.
That's so a really that has wide been background.
Journey so far. Yeah.
That's a thank you for taking us through that. That is a number of high hurdles to have jumped over. Would you agree that one of the challenges in dealing with both government policy and private sector is you're often acting as an interpreter between the two? As someone who has a very entrepreneurial bent, what advice can you give to Namibian entrepreneurs who are trying to work with government on projects?
Yeah, that's a very, very good question. And something that I have dealt with really, really, really deeply. Well, there are different approaches. And what I advise the entrepreneurs always, the private sector always, is that approach that you take. Because sometimes you could either take the approach at the end and you have not finished the beginning, or sometimes you're just stuck somewhere. The best way sometimes is really to do your stakeholder mapping. Who are your relevant stakeholders in the order of their importance? And then you try to see if you can first secure courtesy visits. Sometimes people just want to introduce yourself, who you are, courtesy visit at those key ministries, key institutions, so that you can exchange your ideas with those officials, and on the spot, they can also give you certain information on where to go. And as you get into that, you then end up meeting more people and creating more networks. The others is also obviously to attend the different things happening. There are a lot, but you can choose. And eventually, once you get yourself in an ecosystem where you are playing, you are able to be recognized both ends. People will be able to think about you when there are initiatives, when there are opportunities, because they are aware that you exist. And both were just trying to have that relevance. Also, understanding government policy is very, very important, because when it comes to, for instance, innovation, where you find different people having innovative solutions that could help government accelerate, you know, and sometimes, especially with the young people, they get stuck where they come up with a solution before consulting, because they think that this is wrong from their own view. They have not interacted with anyone. And the time they reach out is when they want to present the solution that they've been working on for the past 2 years, sometimes more. And just to find out that, no, we cannot accommodate you. This is not our priority. This is not what we are looking at. So there's a lot of that actually somehow is sort of have started to kill that collaboration partnership. But at the level where we are, for instance, it's really something that is built for over years and years of trust, years of working together, you know. And it's very hard to sort of explain that it's just A, B, because it really depends on getting at the table and therefore moving on with the people as they work in that space, and you eventually try to cover and uncover things to do. So I hope I'm coming out clear without really giving 1, 2, 3, because it's not really cast in stone. It's really about you, your approach, and how do you position yourself in getting known and introducing yourself into this space of government. But there are different avenues. For me, just keep knocking, keep pushing, and keep attending these forums where you actually make yourself vocal and known. I think that could be your first entry without trying to give you an answer on how to get the project approved or something like that.
Thank you, Maria. That's time is often the hardest piece of advice to give young people, but that's what I'm hearing you saying is be patient and give it time.
The Business Report.
It's the Business Report. My name's Gary Strubel, and we're busy with the spotlight at the moment. And the lady under the spotlight is Maria Emanuel, a technical advisor for the Agricultural Trade Forum. We learned a little bit about her career before the break, but now we come back and talk a little bit about your existing role, Maria. As the technical advisor at the Agricultural Trade Forum, how far is Namibia from achieving food security? And what do you think are the key challenges?
The how far part is very interesting, but I think if one link it to the national objectives, I think since growing up, we're always looking at Vision 2030, and maybe if we can evaluate it, how far we are from that, maybe we'll get that answer. But there has been a number of initiatives that came about in the sector that are sector-specific. For instance, one of the highlights that I would probably pull out is the horticulture sector has been doing very well, you know, looking at the market. The production rate in 1992 was at 2%, and today we are about 45% of local produce and local consumption, and you measure that against the imports as well. Of course, we all know that our beef sector has been a net exporter of that, creating a lot of opportunities. But maybe if I can just jump on the challenges. I think the challenges with us at this present time is really the rate at how we reform. So the rate at which we implement policies, the rate at which we make law, there's so much hanging that has even caused us to decline in the ease of doing business, because it's not that... Sometimes it's that the rest of the countries that are taking over Namibia is because they have reformed, and they are reforming and making the business environment as conducive as possible every time. This is really, really our key challenge. We have things hanging in the small stock sector. We have things hanging in the poultry sector. We have so many policies that are hanging that could unlock actually opportunities and increase the food security. But I think, let me just point that out, that is one of our main challenges.
Thank you. I think that you know, before the break, you spoke about advising entrepreneurs about being patient and giving things time, and perhaps the balancing of that is asking government to occasionally speed up and make sure that they're keeping up with the world. And then you've just concluded a program that, if I'm right, is called the Agri for Women Training, and I'm assuming we took a whole bunch of ladies in the agricultural sector and exposed them to some new thinking and some new skills. Tell us a little bit about what you did there and why you think it's important to focus on women in agriculture?
I think women have always been playing a very, very important role in agriculture. From a perception point of view, maybe more at the production, primary production level, but more at household level, more at subsistence level. But one of the interesting trends we are seeing is that when we come to value addition, which again is one of our challenges, very low, we have a very low value addition, you know, manufacturing sector, is that a lot of initiatives are coming from women, and more so young women, what we call women agripreneurs. So Agri for Women Week is to spotlight on the effort of the contribution of women farmers, women agripreneurs, to give them new information, as you mentioned, you know, the new learning, to network, to actually celebrate and highlight their contribution. And we started off with a week of a series of videos where we're sharing success stories, where we're sharing policy issues and opportunities. And then we did a training on Tuesday and Wednesday with specific topics brought to you by TRALAC. And today we have a public lecture at NAST, again, just to unpack some of the opportunities within the Continental Free Trade Agreement, the African Continental Agreement that is ongoing. And tomorrow we end on with a panel discussion, again live on the Agri for Women YouTube, again just to unpack the different topics that we have. There's so much to do, but a week we feel is a bit sufficient to just impact this onto the women. So that has been happening. And with the last lecture, we actually invite also the men to come. It's not just that it's women in one room. We also want the men to come and network with the women, but also to celebrate the women effort in agriculture. So this is actually brought to you by the GRZ. They supported this Farming for Resilient as well as ECA project. They are the main organizers behind this event. And just to spotlight and celebrate and talk about agriculture from the women perspective. So that's really the whole week. And getting that data out is very important, Gary, the data. What are we saying about the resettlement farm? How many women have benefited? What are we saying about the contribution of the different initiatives? How many women are contributing? How can we get them to actually come to the commercial level? So we need to understand where they are and how they can be helped. And this week will just help us come up with this, some of these output to shape the way forward in our work.
Thank you, Maria. Incredibly important work being done in an incredibly important sector for Namibia, and all the best for the projects and challenges that lie ahead. That's tonight's spotlight here on the Business Report, and we were talking to Maria Emmanuel, the technical advisor to the Agricultural Trade Forum, who's just rounded off a week of training and exposure for women in agriculture. The Business Report spotlight was brought to you by Safland Property Group. Safland Property Group, offering the widest range of property services in Namibia.
It's the Business Report with Gary Struble.
This BizNews Wrap is proudly brought to you by Africa Personnel Services, APS. We work for you. Time now for the BizNews Wrap here on the Business Report on Nova 103.5. Hope you're enjoying the show so far. And if you haven't yet, then you'll certainly enjoy the next segment as we chat to Alec Hogg from BizNews in South Africa about the biggest stories on the platform over the last week or so. Alec, you and I have known each other many, many years, and it's wonderful to welcome you to one of our radio stations here in Namibia.
Yeah, indeed. We do go back a long way, Gary, and I'm full of admiration for what you've done in the past and what you're doing in Namibia. So keep it going. We're happy to be your partners.
Thanks very much. So the Business Report partners with BizNews for all sorts of different kind of content and making sure that we are on the cutting edge of stories as they happen all around Africa. Alec, it's been a busy week, as it inevitably is around the world, but certainly in our little part of the world, a lot of big things happening. And on the platform today, I can only assume on BizNews that over the last couple of days, the local municipal elections have taken precedence.
Well, I've had a particular interest here because so many of my friends have migrated or semigrated from Johannesburg to Cape Town because of the far better governance that one has in the Cape than in the commercial centre. So it's been something we've watched closely as a company, but also for me personally, I've been watching it very closely because this is where I live and where I have been for most of my life. And it was fascinating to see the way that the ebbs and flows of the different votes as they came through. The IEC has said they apologize. That's the Independent Electoral Commission of South Africa. They did make a few missteps, and I could see that by going through the day and updating the figures. But I think they've done a fantastic job. They only had 42 days to organize this election. And the real keys that have come out of it is the voter turnout is down, but kind of quantify that. In the 2016 local elections in South Africa, there were just over 15 million people who voted. The now official adjusted figures from the IEC says this time only 11.5 million. So it's down by a quarter, and that's had a predictable impact on the ANC. The DA on its side has been hammered by the emergence of new parties, and particularly here in Johannesburg by its former mayor of Johannesburg and DA mayor at the time, Herman Mashaba. He started a new party called Action SA, and they've taken 16% of the vote, which is a huge impact for the first time round. And there have been a number of other little parties that have come up. The Freya Front has been an absolute star of this election. They've trebled their share of the vote. It's only about 2.5% nationally, but they've actually doubled the number of people who voted for them. So it's interesting to see the smaller parties, the African Christian Democratic Party, a new one called the Patriotic Alliance, all of them taking a few percentage here and there, and they could be kingmakers in various municipalities. It does look like coalition politics has arrived in South Africa in a big way.
Of course, and it also bodes towards the next general election, which in the South African system happens in an offset manner. So it's the trends to watch. Here in Namibia, we often peek over the wall at what's happening in our neighbours. And just from a Namibian point of view, where you know we have much the same sort of party structure that the ANC enjoyed for many years, should SWAPO be a little bit nervous about the trends emerging from South Africa?
Undoubtedly. And if they look further north to what happened in Malawi first and then in Zambia, where the incumbent parties, the liberation parties, were given the benefit of the doubt for decades and have no longer been given that benefit. So they've both been ejected in those two countries. And in South Africa, you can see the mighty ANC doesn't have a single metro that it now, a major metro that it now controls. It's below 50% everywhere, which is inconceivable 10 years ago and doubtful just 5 years ago. So we have these elections every 5 years. And then, as you said, in between, we have a national election every 5 years. So it's 2.5 years to the next election, the next parliamentary election. And on this form, the ANC will lose its majority in parliament. And that's going to make it interesting.
Well, maturing democracies all around Africa. Some more bad news on the cards for everyone this week. And I read a couple of stories on Biz News about it, were the fuel prices. Here in Namibia, we heavily reliant on importing goods from South Africa. So the South African fuel price has a direct knock-on effect in terms of food inflation here in Namibia. The question we wanted to ask is there hope and what is driving these drastic increases?
Well, the major increases we've seen, the rand has fallen again. It's been bumping all over the place. It was only a few months ago, it was sitting at below 14 to the US dollar, around 13 rand 80. Now it costs you almost 15 and a half rand for a US dollar. That's the one thing. And then the other thing is that the oil price itself has been rocketing. That you might recall, in fact, we're negative during the worst of the pandemic. Of course, it was only a technical issue, but it really was down to $11, $12 a barrel. And now it's over $80 a barrel and not looking like it's going backwards at all. So as the world comes back on stream, you have the crude oil price going up. The double whammy for South Africa is that the rand is weakening. And yes, we'll get to 20 rand per litre in South Africa. On top of that is the fact that the government of South Africa, as it's been overspending, has been increasing the tax progressively on petrol. And now we're at a stage where the petrol, a big slug of the petrol price is made up by taxes. So even if the rand were to firm and the oil, crude oil price were to go down, because it's a useful pot from which the politicians can pull additional and very easy taxes. They get it at the pump. I don't think we're going to have too much respite on that. It's interesting to see in that context that in India, for the first time I've ever heard of anyway, the government there has recognized that the issue of the fuel tax is significant. And they've actually started cutting taxes on the fuel in that country to try and offset the impact of a higher crude oil price. But in South Africa, I doubt that that will happen.
Unlikely to happen, and not great news for us here in Namibia. Then just lastly, Alec, I know you've got a party to rush off to with a busy social life. The story that really caught my eye on Biz News this week was a very well-penned article around the rise of Mauritius and Mauritius's economy and what they've gotten right over the last two decades or so with some very particular policies. I know you've also got strong thoughts on that. Perhaps just talk to us about that story a little bit.
Yeah, it's a heck of a party. It's another of our partners, Chai FM, which is the Jewish station here in Johannesburg. We're celebrating its 13th anniversary. It's Bar Mitzvah. So it's really a great celebration that I'm just popping along to see how things are going there. As far as Mauritius is concerned, it's an eye-opener, and it's wonderful to have countries that have embraced free enterprise and capitalism in the sense that they are appealing to investors to come to Mauritius. In fact, the Mauritian government is sending out a delegation to South Africa. They've set themselves a target of getting 30,000 South Africans to migrate to Mauritius. Primarily, they're looking for entrepreneurs and for pensioners. And the reason that they're doing this is because they realize that you bring in, say, an entrepreneur, you bring in someone who creates jobs and then adds to your tax base, And pensioners, they're at the end of their lives. If they can afford to emigrate to Mauritius, they certainly have enough in their back pockets. So these are people that make a massive contribution financially to a society. And we've seen the numbers. Mauritius has now gone ahead of South Africa on GDP per capita. And now that it's ahead of us, it's unlikely again that we will in any, certainly with the kind of policies that are being applied in this country, have any opportunity of catching up to them. Now, of course, it's a much smaller economy as well. And they are very wise. The political approach that the Mauritians are taking is very wise in a broader context when they have a look at what they know what gets economies going. And when you're a developing country like Namibia or South Africa or indeed Mauritius, you're developing the whole context, the definition of developing means that you need money to come in so you can develop your country, and you need money to come from abroad. And that's what they've managed to achieve very successfully, including getting quite a lot of money coming to them from South Africans.
Brilliant, thanks. And we hope the Namibian government taking notes as Mauritius from the sidelines comes in and takes the wealth offshore, but onshore. Alec Hogg, mazel tov, and enjoy the party. Thanks for chatting, and we'll talk again next week. That was Alec Hogg, the founder of BizNews, and you can go read all of those stories and much, much more on the BizNews platform. That's biznews.com. The BizNews Wrap was proudly brought to you by Africa Personnel Services, APS. We work for you.
The Business Report.
This is the Business Report on Nova 103.5, and it's now time for the NSX Market Watch. The NSX Market Watch is proudly brought to you by Express Credit. Express Credit money when you need it most. And joining me in the studio this evening, Eric van Sail. I see on your email signature, it's now Managing Director Designate. My search has brought up different titles, so congratulations. That's going to be a big challenge.
Thanks, Gary. Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, it is quite a challenge.
And of course, that's IJG Securities. Perhaps just give us a little bit of a history of the company.
Yes, IJG Securities is a Namibian stockbroker, one of four Namibian stockbrokers, and we've been around for just over the last 20 years, and been a leading player in the market under the same name for quite a while. There was a period when IJG was part of Point Break, but for the last 17 odd years, we've been operating as a standalone stockbroker, and that's what we do.
Thanks for joining us in the studio this evening. The aim of this particular segment of the Business Report is to take a look at the NSX in particular and just get a bit of an overview. Now, we know the NSX isn't a second-for-second exchange, like many of the bigger exchanges around the world, but there certainly are always things happening in the Namibian economy that affect listed companies. So perhaps we start out with there was a mid-term budget tabled this week. Did we see any impact on the markets?
Yes. The midterm budget was tabled yesterday by the Ministry of Finance, and we think it was quite a reasonable budget. Obviously, it's a midterm budget, so it's basically an update on the budget that we saw in March. So not too much change there. In terms of the impact on the NSX, we didn't really see much movement in relation to what was said by the minister yesterday. So not much movement on the market today. The trades that have taken place at yesterday's closing prices. And for the week overall, we haven't actually seen that much in terms of price movement. There have been quite a few trades, but prices have remained relatively stable. They've been on hold for a little while for many of the stocks. Quite a quiet week on the NSX.
Okay, brilliant. Well, I think it's good news when government reveals a budget and everyone's cool.
Yes, I must qualify that's on the local stocks, the domestic stocks. Obviously, on the dual-listed stocks, comprising mostly of South African companies, there's been quite a lot more movement, and it's actually been quite a busy week on that front.
Okay, well, let's take a look at that. Top performers on the market over the last little bit. Who's been making waves?
Yeah, for the year to date, so the 2021 calendar year, First Rand Namibia has been the standout performer on the local index. So First Rand's up 26% as of yesterday. And then Nectis Holdings has increased, or the share price has risen there by 13.2%. And Paratus Holdings Namibia has increased by 11%. So those are the standouts. And then obviously there's a couple that didn't do that well, RX Properties and Letsego Holdings Namibia, seeing share price decreases of just over 20%.
Not surprising given the various impact from COVID, the slowdowns. What's happening out of South Africa is that those stocks would be affected. Access to credit is obviously something that gets affected. For RMB, an amazing performance, really, already a dominant player in the industry that they act in banking and financial services. And so a really stellar performance for them over the year.
Yes, I think so. Yeah, no, it's they've definitely been the standout performer, and I think quite possibly there was too much of a sell-off in that share price last year, so we have seen some rebounds or quite a few of the equities rebounding. So Nambu's one that rebounded quite a lot last year already. So the price movement this year has been quite muted, and obviously there's quite a lot of there's a cautionary out on Namruz at the moment with a possible deal between Heineken and Distell in South Africa, and then the Heineken South Africa brewery in which Namruz has a stake.
Okay.
So that cautionary putting a damper on any or on too much trading or price movement over the last couple of months.
We'll keep an eye on that stock when we're allowed to go to music festivals again. We'll certainly push some product.
Definitely.
Okay, let's take a quick look at the bond markets then. Some action on the bond market this week?
Yes, yeah. So government did come to market and offered some longer dated bonds from a bond maturing in 2030 to a bond maturing in 2045. So a reasonable demand on the market. Obviously, certain bonds receiving more demand and others less, depending on what the current pricing and yields look like and the shape of the curve. The Namibian yield curve is quite steep at the moment, so obviously the longer dated bonds yielding or trading at quite high yields or low prices, which means the returns there are quite nice at the moment.
Okay, but it also means the Namibian government's having to offer up a lot of change in return for getting some liquidity.
Yes, yeah. So when yields do go up, then on any auction post those yields moving up, government is paying up on that debt. So government's effectively raising less funds on those bonds.
Okay, thanks. All right, then just very quickly, there's been a lot of hype over the last month or two. We've got a new listing coming. It's a big company. It's a big part of the economy. That's, of course, MTC, who had their initial offering that closed off last week. There seems to be a little bit of a lack of direct enthusiasm for the share. That seems to be some of the sentiment that I've picked up. Can you perhaps just give us a bit of an idea? You can't buy their shares yet. You could have bought their shares, and now you've got to wait for them to be offered on the stock exchange. Is that correct?
Yes, yeah. So the IPO was open for a period of six or 7 weeks, and that came to a close on Monday this week, the 1st of November. So post 12 o'clock on Monday, one couldn't subscribe for MTC shares via the public offering. And now, should you be interested in acquiring some MTC shares, you'd have to wait until the 19th of November when we officially list the company. So the bell ringing will take place on at 9 o'clock that morning, and thereafter the shares will trade on the NSX, on the market.
And you guys have been actively involved in that listing process, so you're not at liberty to really say much about the share going forward.
Yes.
But it's, I would imagine it's always an interesting process when an institute like that goes to market.
Yes, especially MTC being a public enterprise previously, so wholly owned by government. Obviously, there was a listing or requirement that MTC list, it's not often that a public enterprise comes to market in any country, and we haven't seen that before in Namibia. So that's quite encouraging as well. So obviously, that's further potential funds, depending on the success of the listing, that will go into government coffers. And as the minister mentioned in his budget speech yesterday, those funds aren't actually taken into account. So should it be a relatively successful listing, then there'd be a smaller deficit for the current budget year as well. So, you know, that's quite positive on the fiscus and just for the public to be able to participate in a company that's, you know, so dominant in what they do and part of everybody's lives in Namibia. Most of us have an MTC SIM card or have had one in the past, and being able to own a share in that company is brilliant, and it's definitely a step forward in terms of the offerings on the NSX. So any additional stock that becomes available on the NSX provides some boost to liquidity and diversification potential. Just a lot of benefits coming there. And you're 100% correct. With us being involved in the listing, can't say too much about what uptake has been like and what enthusiasm has been like in the market. I'll reserve some comment on that.
All right, well, we'll have you back in a couple of weeks, Eric, and we can chat a little bit more perhaps when things are all out in the open and we're trading actively. Thank you very much for joining us today, Eric Vincel, Managing Director Designate of IJJ Securities. And this was the NSX Market Watch, proudly brought to you by Express Credit. Express Credit, money when you need it most.
The Business Report. Podcasts on nova.com.na.
Been a big week for Southern Africa, but almost an even bigger week for the world, as the world leaders hunker down in Scotland, of all places, to get together to talk about the 26th Conference of Parties of the United Nations Framework on Climate Change, or COP, as it's famously known. COP has also been famously known for disappointing the world on many occasions with big decisions that haven't led to much action. But at the moment, there's increased pressure with natural disasters happening all over the world and climate change now becoming ever more apparent in many countries, including Namibia. We caught up with the Minister of Environment, Forestry and Tourism, Bahamba Shafeta, who's attending the event in Glasgow. Good afternoon, Mr. Minister. With Europe said to invest 1 billion euros in clean energy technologies, such as green hydrogen at COP26, what economic opportunities have you identified for the Namibian economy in the fight against climate change?
First and foremost, Namibia has got a renewable energy policy, which has already set up an agenda. That's why we have a green hydrogen agenda. And to use our renewable energy to produce power instead of coal-fired power stations that we have and replace them. So we are shifting from coal-fired power stations and also any energy production that will then emit carbon. So we are shifting from there. And that is the advantage for Namibia to also get investment into this important renewable energy. And we have already set up areas where we are going to have a production for renewable energy. That's clean energy.
Now, we've seen that South Africa, which is the 12th biggest carbon emitter, receive funds to end its coal addiction, and developed countries pledging to end deforestation. Has Namibia received any funds for mobilizing a green economy?
Here at COP26, Namibia is going to announce the funding, financial investment into renewable energy program to have a renewable energy policy. And that policy gave birth to a green hydrogen agenda for Namibia. That's why we have a green hydrogen council, which is composed of ministers. In that process, we have then come up with a program and also a project that we invited investors to invest into clean energy. And we have gone the process, which was a transparent process. And out of that, we have got some of the investors who are ready to invest billions into renewable energy.
With a net zero emissions target set for 2050, how is Namibia supporting this goal? And are we financially able to support the initiative?
Yes, part of that will be funded by investors. That is now the first stage where we are going to have now these investors in renewable energy. And that does mean clean energy, given the green hydrogen agenda. So these are the first investors that are going to put in money. And then Namibia, because of the policy, will invest its own funding. That is state money will also get into that in order to ensure that we have or achieved our goals, our ambition in our nationally determined contribution that we have already submitted to the UN.
Lastly, Mr. Minister, what does Namibia want from COP26 in terms of investment and support?
We are looking at much funding into mitigation and adaptation. We have already some programs and options on mitigation and adaptation, which Namibia has set up, and we have proposals that we have to submit to the Green Climate Fund and Adaptation Fund, and also the Environmental Global Facility. These institutions, we found that it's a window of funding that Namibia can benefit from for agricultural activities, any other adaptation programs, and to mitigate the effect of climate change.
Thank you very much, Mr. Minister. That's Minister Bahamba Shafeta, the Minister of Environment, Forestry and Tourism, here on the Business Report on Nova 103.5.
Namibia's business leader on Nova 103.5.
I'm Angie Scholes with your weekly economics wrap. The latest trade statistics released shows exports decreased by 19.7% year-on-year in September 2021 to 7.2 billion Namibian dollars compared to a revised 6.2% year-on-year in August 2021. Imports decreased by 1.9% year-on-year in September 2021 to 10.3 billion Namibian dollars compared to a revised increase of 12.1% year-on-year in August. This heals a 3.1 billion Namibian dollars trade deficit compared to a deficit of 2.8 billion Namibian dollars in the previous month. Here's Theo Klein from Simonis and Storm.
This, of course, does not bode well for economic growth. If we look at the GDP calculation, GDP is equal to consumption plus investment plus government expenses plus net exports. Net exports being exports minus imports. And if this is a negative balance, as it is the case in Namibia, then of course that contributes negatively to the GDP calculation, and therefore it will contribute negatively to overall economic growth in Namibia. Importing more than what we export places pressure on our foreign currency reserves. At the moment, Bank of Namibia has just over 6 months' worth of import cover in reserves.
Minister of Finance Ipumbi Shimi tabled the midterm budget review under a green energy theme on Wednesday. Shimi said a total of 2.2 billion Namibian dollars has been availed for reallocation across budget votes. The reallocated amount constitutes 41.4 million Namibian dollars and 279.8 million Namibian dollars realized from suspensions on the operational budget and development budget respectively. Meanwhile, the domestic economy is projected to grow by 1.9% this year, a downward revision from 2.1% estimated in the main budget. We contacted Salome Hay from the High Economic Intelligence for his view on the budget.
What the minister did really was just to reallocate resources. He took away from the development budget, and then obviously he moved the money more towards some of the operational expenses. I mean, maybe there are some positive issues as well that one can speak to. What we do know now is that Eurobond has been redeemed successfully. Then the others is that there's a lot of operational expenses. The reallocation of the 2.2 billion goes to health, which is needed. What I'm particularly excited about is Namibia Wildlife Resort. That would assist in terms of rejuvenating tourism sectors we have opened up.
South Africa on Tuesday won a commitment from a group of rich nations for at least 8.5 billion US and technical assistance to help the country's transition to a low-carbon economy. France, Germany, Britain and the US, as well as the EU, signed the accord with Johannesburg at COP26 climate summit in Glasgow to help ensure a just transition for South Africa's coal-dependent economy. South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa hailed the deal as a watershed moment. And finally, in the biggest story of the week, the price of petrol and diesel increased by 50 and 70 cents a litre respectively. This, the Ministry of Mines and Energy says, was necessitated by international oil prices having to hit their highest point since 2018, while the Namibia dollar also depreciated against the US dollar in October, resulting in under-recoveries of 132 cents on petrol and 154 cents on diesel, and the Central Energy Fund absorbing approximately 120 million Namibian dollars on behalf of consumers. Here's Robert McGregor from Cyrus Capital for his take.
The increase in fuel prices will hurt consumers. It will likely also lead to increased pressure for public transport price increases, as we've already seen. And this will obviously have an impact on household spending, given that we see households are under pressure, having seen job losses over the past 18 months, and before that in a weak economic period we had since 2016. In addition to this, we aren't seeing substantial wage increases, both in the public sector and the private sector, meaning that the spending of households is coming under increasing pressure, particularly in this low growth environment.
Thanks, Angie. We're now towards the end of the program. It's been our debut program here on the Business Report on Nova 103.5. And we spoke a little earlier about Nambu's share price. And I think after all the effort we put into this first episode, I might just go and see if I can't boost their share price a little bit. Thanks so much for listening to the Business Report. If you stayed with us through the whole hour, please let us know what you think. All the contact details will be at the end of the show. You can also hit us up on the Nova 103.5 website on nova.com.na. Thanks so much for listening. We'll chat to you next week here on the Business Report.
That was the Business Report on Nova 103.5. Listen to all the segments and previous episodes with our podcast service on nova.com.na. The Business Report was presented by Gary Struble and produced by Limey Ilago and David Bishop. Comments and questions can be sent to tbr@nova.com.na.